Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, entrepreneur and co-founder of Club Joyful, Scott Clark.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Morris Mills. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I had some great conversations with both our interview guest and our performance guest, and I was reminded after both conversations, about something that I hadn't thought of in a while. And it's going to be part of today's show for sure. And that is to say that I grew up in a family, in a community, and in a culture. And by culture, I do mean my Italian heritage. But I think it was also a part of the times and the culture maybe in America or where we lived at the time. I'd like to think so. Where when there was something to celebrate, we gathered. And as a kid, I might not have appreciated that all the time, but we did. I actually grew up to appreciate it more. When there wasn't necessarily anything to celebrate, we gathered. Like, what are you doing today? Nothing. Nobody. Let's get together. And we'd get together. And interestingly enough, when there was hurt or sadness or loss of almost any kind that I can think of, we gathered. And we were there with each other. I'd like to say for each other. I don't know that everybody was as present as possible, but we were definitely there. And it was something that we did. And I have to say this word gathering, and some would say community and some would say party maybe, but I've been using this word gathering because there's something about the gathering where we come together and not just gathering. Like that's why I'm shying away from party, because like what makes a good gathering? Because if we feel safe, if we feel like we could be ourselves, like if we feel comfortable, I mean, potentially not all the time. We all have stuff. We have stuff with each other. But this thing about being able to come together, gather together, be there together with each other and for each other. And I feel like we've either lost that or not enough of us do that. And I have to say, I have a big family. Very loving family, and we all grew up that way. I also have really close friends that I love dearly and I'm very close to, and I also have wonderful associates and acquaintances, and I still don't feel like I have enough good quality gatherings or potentially even gathering places. So it's interesting. We're going to dive into this conversation with our guest. We've titled this episode High Time for Relearning and Reinstalling Community. This is our episode 850 of the Life Changes Show, and we're featuring our guest, who's our interview guest, entrepreneur and co-founder of Club Joy, a family club and cafe, Scott Clark, and our performance guest, recording artist, writer, producer, and performer, Morris Mills. First, we welcome Scott Clark. Welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Right on, man. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. And I can't wait to get into the actual conversation. However, I have to say, on our way into it, I'm excited about you and this space specifically, because I'm going to ask you a little bit about your background. Okay. You seem to have gravitated to startups. You seem to have seen things that are going to be good or people are going to want and things that are going to be successful. So the fact that you have chosen this space of a joyful club for families, and you must see something in there that a lot of people don't see yet. So, but before that, how did you gravitate to all these startups and then have them do so well, as a matter of fact?
Well, I think the common theme amongst all of this is the concept of creation. And startups typically are thinking of new ideas, new things that, you know, you get a founder who either sees something that is a challenge that can be solved, that can be improved. But the ones that I like really get 2-3 steps ahead. And one of my favorite quotes of all time from Henry Ford, if I'd asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And at some level, right, in order for society to progress and move forward, you have to get a couple steps ahead, because most people only see what they can see or an improvement upon what they know. But to really change the game, to take leaps and bounds, to be revolutionary, you have to go into a whole new bucket that people just never really saw coming. And that is really, really attractive to me. The idea of building something from nothing, taking an almost mystical, magical what if, and then turning that into something tangible, something real, and in the business context, something that can make money and grow and scale and employ people and deliver value on multiple levels. I don't think I understood that when I was, you know, a younger kid going into that world, but upon reflection, I feel like that's what it was. And so every job that I ended up taking was always with that entrepreneur, that leader who was dynamic, who was passionate, who had a great idea, something new, something different, something that hadn't been done before. And I went, yeah, that's exciting. I want a piece of that. And I could get myself into it, right? It wasn't just a job. It literally took over my life. And to the point where my friends would joke about it, in the sense that, you know, that my first startup, it was a company called golferslife.com, and then it was hotjobs.com, and my friends would be like, oh, you're hot jobbing, because everything I would do and say and talk about was the company. And, you know, later in life it was a company called Innovid, and for 7 years I was at that company, and I wore the gear, and I, you know, had the, you know, colors were blue, I bled blue, and I talked about it, and I loved it. And it's I think very difficult to have that degree of passion and motivation and energy unless you feel like you're really adding value and changing things for the better. And now with Club Joyful, it's kind of the ultimate manifestation of that.
Is there a word for this? The best I could think of is, wow, he's a serial startup-preneur. Like somebody who just keeps going after the startup thing.
Yeah. Well, I want to reserve that word for the people who consistently are the founders. You know, I spent the first, call it 20 years of my career joining startups where there was another visionary who had the idea. And I came in early enough to help mold, shape, add to, and develop the idea and bring it to fruition. That was one of my other kind of secret sauces, was the ability to take that concept and then communicate it and articulate it to other people in a way that they could digest, understand, and ultimately buy it, right, in a product-oriented sense. So, you know, for me, it's almost serial creator, because even during that time, right, it doesn't have to be your idea for you to be able to create with it. Like, you know, nice. I didn't invent paint, but I can still use paint. I didn't invent the guitar, but I could still use the guitar. Nice. And so I think that was kind of my special thing, was that I could work with someone, work with any idea, whether it came from my own heart or someone else's, and just see it all the way through and see all the possibilities and really enjoy that process of good ideas, bad ideas, doesn't matter ideas, just that's the fun. You know, to me, it's the developing concepts that I think really speaks to me.
I have to ask you, because I know you're a musician and I know you live a very creative life, an artistic life, and in some way that correlates with what you're saying, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, music and guitar, and specifically for me, songwriting, which I've been doing now for 30 years, has been the way that I process life, essentially, like, emotional situations, things that just, happen and unfold. They don't have to be major life-changing things. They could be a street sign that you see that just sparks a cute idea in your mind. But the way I'm built is that I turn that into something. And for me, I've been given a gift of musicality and a sense of melody. And, I experience the world through that lens. I hear things. Everything comes to me like a jingle, basically. And that's really exciting and fun. But music, like these other things that we're talking about, like business, there's a lightheartedness. I mean, some songs are very serious and some songs are deeply emotional and are meant to tap into, really serious subjects. But generally speaking, music has a soulful whimsy to it. And if we can approach business like that, if we can approach our relationships like that, if we can approach parenting like that, I think we're all going to be better off for it. And I've at least tried my best to do that.
Nice. Well, we're going to get into the Club Joyful in just a moment. But when we look at things like hotjobs.com and Yahoo, and it looks like your life has been a song. You've gone from this great company to that one and made lots of money at this and all that. And we know that that's not the case for anybody. At least, it might look like something, but it isn't. So you've had your experiences along the way. How does this attitude that you have help you, or has helped, how has it helped you during those times when you either didn't know which way to go or things looked like they weren't going?
I've always been a gut intuition guy. I think I've always felt what makes sense for me and then maybe rationalized into that decision. But the very kind of receiving feminine intuition side of life has served me incredibly well. And a lot of these opportunities kind of fell in my lap, if you will. Like I'm doing one thing, and then out of the blue, someone calls me and says, "Hey, did you know this?" And ultimately, that phone call changes my life. And I don't overthink it. I just lean into it with gratitude and just know that that's exactly how the world works. And I remember early on in life hearing that Steve Jobs commencement speech, I think at Stanford, where he says, "You can only connect the dots backwards." And that was just so profound for me because it is sometimes easy. You look back and go, "Oh, because I met that guy in college, and because he took that job with the recruiter, that gave him access to that job at hotjobs.com, and he knew that I was a salesperson, and that's why he called me, and that's how it all came together," right? Those are easy dots to connect. But in between those dots are literally infinite dots that turned you left, turned you right, that stopped you at the traffic sign, that made you had cereal for breakfast. We don't comprehend at this level how these things are affecting what happens to us later in life, but I kind of understood that conceptually. And so it's like you can't put too much weight on one decision, and you can't de-emphasize other decisions. You just kind of have to show up with a general expectation that things are working out. You just don't understand the how, the why. But the thing that you can understand is how you feel in the moment. And do I feel like this is the right decision? Do I feel like I'm being guided to say yes to this job or to this apartment or to this car? And I think that's something that a lot of people don't trust or rely on enough in their lives, and partly because they don't get the guidance that says that's okay to live by feel as opposed to rational decision making based on what you're quote unquote supposed to do or what people, dial in as conventional wisdom. And I don't know that I ever played into that. I feel like the wisdom was mine, and I was willing to live and die by those mistakes and be at peace with that.
Oh, well, connect some dots for us as to, if you would, as to how Club Joyful came to be.
There's so much, right? If I just practice what I preach right there and say it's too many to really comprehend, because this is really at some level today, since there really only is the present, right? There is no future. There's only the present. Past is an illusion. It's just the memories we have of what happened before. And then we choose to interpret it how we want. And we tell ourselves stories about what that meant. And it was good, it was bad. But, you know, these are all just figments of the mind. And when I think about everything that's led up to this, it's like I had to have all of these things happen in order for Joyful to exist. But the things that were most kind of pertinent, number one, I was in a kind of dark-ish place. I had lost my purpose. I had been through all the jobs that I had been through, and you know, COVID happened, and I was a stay-at-home dad for a while, and I really enjoyed doing that. But I'm a purpose person, right? I'm on a mission to make the world a better place, to have impact one way or another. And when that was taken away from me and I couldn't find a new path towards it, I was just generally lost, borderline depressed, just sort of confused about what next. Like, what do I do with my life at this point? And at the same time as I was feeling that, my wife was also feeling it, similar but different. She's been a successful photographer for 16 years, a great company called The Pod Photography, has employees running it. It just like really, really successful. But even she got to the point where it was like, am I just going to be Erica the baby photographer for the rest of my life? And so she was starting to confront her own kind of midlife. What do I do now? Like, how does the next part of my life go somewhere new? And I think a lot of people come to this, and it's unfortunate that society calls it midlife crisis. It should be called midlife awakening. Nice. Hopefully we can work on that language one at a time. But we were both basically having overlapping midlife awakenings, and we both had, and I'm no longer shy to say it, we both had spiritual awakenings, because she started to explore things like Reiki and sound healing and tuning forks. And I started to explore things like breath work and meditation. And we basically both overlapped and realized that we were in control of what happens next. And we would read things from Joe Dispenza, or there's that the guy Bashar, who's a channel, and talks about, right, like the way vibration works and all this stuff. And so we started to look at this and go, well, if all of this is true, and I'm willing to believe that it is, and it feels like it is, well, then that means we have the power to design our own lives. And if we do, well, then let's get serious about it. What does life really look like if we could truly pick and choose whatever we want, not tied to anyone else's expectations, not tied to what you're supposed to do at this age in life, et cetera, et cetera. And so for me, it became about music. And I felt like I was not going to be happy as a human being in life anymore unless I could find a way to make music more integrated into my everyday. And not just as a hobby, not just writing songs at 10 o'clock at night after everyone went to bed, but really being on stage, putting music out into the world, trying to impact people. And I was thinking about it, like, it's really tough to be a musician. And What if I had a venue, and then I could play whenever I wanted at the venue? I could hire musicians and come in and meet all these people and add more revenue into the artist community, which I aspire to do. And I started getting my head around, well, this could be really good. And now, simultaneously, Erica was thinking about energy healing and manifest coaching, and how could we help people, particularly our demo, which is parents. How can we help other parents have this feeling, have this sense of control and ownership, and reduce stress and increase joy? And she said, you know, we can make a place that maybe does energy healing for that and builds community for that. And I said, well, that's great, because I want to have a venue for music. We could do healing music. And then next thing you know, we have, well, what if we just kind of had a place that was like for parents and families holistically? And there was a social element that had music and high vibe events and activities and cool stuff for the adults. And we had classes and fun things for the kids. And there was a place for the parents to grab a coffee and a place for the kids to run around and have fun. God, wouldn't a place like that be so cool? There isn't a place like that. And then it was like, why isn't there a place like that? And then you start doing your research and you go, there really isn't. And then as we were exploring this, I was driving down Lincoln Boulevard past what was the old Love Shack. And it was now a vacant building, you know, with the for lease sign. And I call the number, leave a message. I call the next day, leave a message. And on a Sunday, we happened to be driving by as a family. We pull into the lot. And the story goes that had we not pulled in at that exact moment in time, there's no way we would have gotten the lease for what is now Club Joyful, because at that exact like 20 minutes of time, the owner of the property happened to be there. And we got to talking with him about our vision and this family place, and we were going to put our own money in. And after we left, he turned to the building manager and he said, "Hey, I know they can't afford the rent the way that we're asking for." He goes, "But if this family wants it, you got to give it to them. They are our tenants. Don't be greedy on the rent. Like, this is it." And within like, I don't know, 4 or 5 days, we had a lease. And you know, Eric and I looked at each other and we said, are we really doing this? Are we going to completely uproot our lives? Are we going to raid our savings account? Are we going to do this crazy idea? And honestly, we couldn't not do it. At that point, it's one of those, you ask the universe responded, gave us everything we could possibly want to set us up for success. How do you look at that and say no? We would have regretted it for the rest of our lives. And so it was an easy yes. We signed the lease and Club Joyful was born.
You know, one of the things that sparked my monologue today was the fact that during this time when it seems like there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of worry, and all kinds of other things going on, that it feels like, especially through COVID, we were taught or we got used to just kind of dealing with it by ourselves. So interesting time to start something up like this. But I thought about it, it's like, wait a minute, we used to gather when there were issues, when there were losses, when there was pain.
Yeah, and I was reflecting and thinking as you were saying those things, and I was wondering if you were going to continue that, because there's also gathering around joy and celebration and love and success.
Absolutely.
And it has to be all, because we are dynamic human beings that experience all. And so it's easier to celebrate with someone and more deeply impactful to celebrate with someone who's the very same person who was there for you when you were down. And that range of emotion from, you know, the worst you've ever felt to the best you've ever felt, if you can share that with another human being, first of all, that's beautiful. And hopefully that's your spouse or kid or best friend, that you have someone close to you that you experience life that way with. But to me, the power of community and what we aspire to with Club Joyful is all of the above, right? And parenting is rife with challenges and rife with joy. There's so many things that are beautiful and lovely and incredible and make you laugh and cry tears of joy. And at the same time, there's things that make you want to pull your hair out and grit your teeth and are so, so painful and trying and challenging. And if you can have a group of people that can trust each other, that can be vulnerable with each other, that can cut through the small talk and talk about real things that are happening to real people, like, that is gold. It is gold. It is like the solve for so many of these issues around depression or anxiety, around loneliness. It's community is the answer. And you know, you talked about the word gathering, and gathering, you know, that's part of it. But there's something that has to go deeper, right? Because the relationship and the conversation that you can have with another human being, there's degrees of that, right? Mm-hmm. You can talk about the weather in a gathering. You can talk about the, you know, the new car that Tesla just released. You know, you can talk about politics in a gathering. But can you talk about what's in your heart? Can you talk about what you're really going through? Can you talk about the person you just fell in love with and why? Can you talk about the divorce that you're going through? Like, and I want to have a place where people are real and can communicate about real things without fear of being judged, without fear that they have to hold back because I don't know what this person's going to say or think, and I might have to see them, you know, at the school picnic, you know, in 2 days, and I don't want them to know that I was crying at home last night because XYZ thing. And like, if we can evolve past that, then you have a solid ground to know that everything is going to be okay. And you have the reassurance, you know, from like-minded people. So now the real trick question is, well, how do you find yourself in such a community? And we are asking ourselves this every day, because it's kind of easy to get people to gather, you know, throw a party, play some live music, get a silent disco going, put a thing together. You know, people will come out, people want to have fun. Okay, that's easy. But how do you get those people to come back and really relate and really talk? And that's harder, and it's a longer climb, but it is infinitely more valuable. And quite honestly, Eric and I, you know, we have that as a vision, as a desire. We've partnered with people like the Grateful Drafts, like Super Bloom, other practitioners and healers in the space and the energy world that really know how to hold space and have these incredible containers that push people to be vulnerable. And I want to do more of it. And I think people are craving it. And we get a little gun shy and we get a little insecure when we start. But once you get through that, God, what a relief. What a relief it is to let something out to a person who looks you in the eye and listens and cares and then gives you a big hug and says, it's okay. And guess what? I'm going through the same thing. And let me tell you about mine so you don't feel like you're so alone. I mean, come on. That's the gold right there.
Did you feel you and your wife were equipped to be able to show up in that way, or have you found your learning process as well?
We are human beings too, which means there are days that we show up with joy to our core, and there are days that we show up and don't want to be there. Mm. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And what we've kind of learned is that we have to sometimes help each other to see where we're at. We, you know, you don't always have a great perception of self. Other people, especially people who know you, can see like, hey, you know, your energy's a little off, right, man? Are you okay? Mm. And I'd be like, yeah, man, I'm fine. You know, I'm fine. Just I'm not like smiling, but I'm just like a normal person. I'm okay. Like, nah, something's a little off. Do you like, and I think we've gotten to know each other even more deeply through this process to help each other be conscious and aware. Because once you're conscious and aware, then you can make a decision. Okay, I'm aware that I'm in a bad mood. Do I know why? Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Doesn't matter. Do I still want to be in a bad mood now that I've recognized it? And if the answer is yes, I still want to be in a bad mood, then you really need to analyze what's going on and maybe, you know, remove yourself from the public environment, blah, blah, blah. But typically, when you can be aware of something, you can then make a decision and say, you know what, there's no reason for me to be in a bad mood right now. Let me look at gratitude. Let me look around. Let me look to joy. And usually we can kind of turn it around. We've gotten, I think, really, really good at separating from expectations of practicing that Zen Buddhist art of detachment and really just going through our day, our lives, our weeks, our months, just trying our best to create a fun, joyful experience for those who come and for Erica and I to be fulfilled in what we do and do it with levity and laughter and excitement and just continue to remind ourselves, like, this is a game. Life is a game. Games are supposed to be fun. If you're not having fun, maybe you're playing the wrong game. And what do we need to do to return to that place where I can wake up with a smile, with gratitude, and show up at work with a smile, with gratitude, and help someone with a smile, with gratitude? Because we all need it. And if we have the audacity to call a place Club Joyful, then we really, really need to represent joy and create a joyful experience. And we know that that starts with us and our energy and how we greet people when they come in and how they feel. But like I said, we're human beings also. You know, we're not just like two giddy smiling fools who are just, you know, joyful from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to sleep. But it's an aspirational thing, right? Like, yes, having joy in your life is the aspiration. And we go there every day. We own the place. We run the place. Most people will come, you know, once a week, twice a week or something like that. And they may be looking at Joyful as the escape. Like, they might have a really stressful life situation. So when they step into Joyful, we want to make sure that that hour or 2 hours that they are there, that that is their joy practice. That is their smile. That is their community that recharges them when they go back into their lives.
Let's talk about being social for a moment, because I think so many of us have learned to be quote unquote social on social media. It's a whole different ballgame, isn't it? In person. In what is it? IRL in real life.
Yeah, I mean, we've begun to mistake this notion that broadcasting our lives through pictures and videos is somehow living in community or sharing, like, you know, the art of storytelling of, you know, what did you do? When someone says, oh, here, let me show you my Instagram. We've kind of lost that art of communicating, of storytelling, of being present to who we are, talking about what we've done. And everybody knows, for the most part, you know, what you put onto these social platforms are the highlight reels, the carefully curated. It's, you know, I took 9 pictures and this is the best one, and that's the one that goes on. And so, like, you know, it's just, it's not real life, you know what I mean? And so social experiences are meant to be life experiences. This is kind of like the highlight reel of life. And, you know, we struggle with it as parents. I know a lot of parents do too, because you have other family members that live in different places. You have grandparents, right? It's really, really nice. They get to be a part of your life because you post these pictures of, you know, you and your kid, you went to the zoo. Okay, that's great. And, you know, grandma sees it and says, oh, it was so fun. She fed a camel. And like, that's great. It's great. There's no demonization of that. It's unfortunately, though, what it's done to us to think that that should somehow replace interaction with people. And, you know, I think we all see it. You go to restaurants, you go on vacations. Bro, we went on a little trip to Cabo just to get away for a couple of days. And literally in the pool, at the pool bar, two like kind of young, or maybe like young 20s, I guess, women, each on their phone sitting next to each other. And I'm like, you're in a pool, you're on vacation, you're at the bar, you're there together. First of all, what the hell are you doing with your phone in your hand anyway? But this addiction, this sickness, this notion that there's something behind this screen, be it information, be it pictures, be it, you know, someone who wasn't able to make it to the vacation, I guess. But we're finding something so compelling by what lives on the internet that is more compelling than the human being that's right next to you. And this has been years. I don't have a solve for this other than trying to continue to encourage people, right, to be in community more often and to revalue that we are social beings. From the beginning of time, we gathered together and we should continue to do so. But yeah, like the word social kind of got hijacked, unfortunately. And it would be kind of funny if you could take, I almost think that's that Paul Simon song, like if I could take all my former lovers and put them in a room, you know, for one night. It's almost like if you could take all of your Instagram friends, quote unquote friends, or your like Discord friends, you know, if you're a gamer or a live streamer, and actually put them in a room together, would you be able to even communicate? Like, would you even be able to have a conversation? Would you know what to do with the people who are tapping like and send and share as somehow signals to say, I'm a friend, I care? Okay, well then why don't we get together and go have dinner tomorrow night?
What? That's weird. You're weird. Well, actually, you know, some of the things that we talked about that are currently available and you'd like to see be available at Club Joyful, it seemingly border on what used to be considered kind of woo-woo, and maybe even, I don't know, maybe for you too, before you started to get into some of these things. So how is that faring?
Yeah, we joked that we should put a sign up that said not too woo, because look, prior to this, I'd heard of chakras, didn't know what they were, didn't know how they affected me, didn't understand energy at all, understood sound waves, maybe from music, but did not understand an aura, an energy field. I did not know anything about sound baths, about breath work. Again, these are things I maybe heard of, maybe knew someone, but, you know, 0% of my life was focused on any of this. And then when we started to discover and learn and experience, our minds were totally blown. There was no going back. And, you know, once you just can't unsee some of the things that we've seen and experienced ourselves, and the conversations that I've had with higher self and spirit, the ability for Erica with a tuning fork to know a person, a complete stranger that she's never met, give her 5 minutes with a tuning fork and she will know everything about you. And it's just, these things are incredible and so, so, so valuable and so unfortunately buried under that label of like, you know, well, that's Eastern medicine or that's woo woo or that's, you know, that's spiritual crazy stuff. And it's really, really, really unfortunate. But one thing that we tried to do with Club Joyful and some of the messages that Erica was getting as we were unfolding our vision was that because we didn't know any of this, because we were outsiders, because we came to this as what we now call normies, we were uniquely positioned to create sort of a new brand for this kind of work and a new onboarding, a new accessibility path to help people benefit from understanding chakras and energy healing and meditation and sound and manifesting and all this kind of stuff. And I know that as it's moving slowly but surely more towards the mainstream, we are really trying to focus on the family unit when it comes to this stuff, because moms, dads who are new to parenting, especially the transition in one's life of going from not having a child to then having a child and going through all of those phases and the anxiety and the decisions and the uncertainties and the loss of self and the reinvention of self and just so many things. Like it's a great, great, great time for you to take a step back and understand where you're at, especially as you start parenting a child, because you are bringing the stories that your parents put upon you or that you have as learned behavior, either conscious or subconscious. And we think it's incredibly important that you come face to face with that so that you can parent in a way that is designed by you and not the stories that you are subconsciously just bringing to the table, because you never had the tools to look at that and go, okay, who is the me here? Is this my dad talking? Because like, that's how my dad talked to me. Okay, is that a good thing? Yeah, that was actually very loving. Okay, great, I like that. Was that a bad thing? Yeah, actually, I didn't really love that so much when you yelled at me when I played bad at hockey. So I'm going to maybe be aware of that so that I can change behavior so that I can raise my child in a way that's more consistent with my value, which I might not even understand yet until I do some of this work so that I can find the real me. And what tends to happen is, back to this whole midlife awakening, is that we finally get to this stage where we're kind of taken care of, we've been through survival, we're ready to now understand something more. We're ready for that fulfillment. We're ready for that kind of next level of soul, spirit, understanding and fulfillment in life. And that's the perfect, perfect, perfect time to invest in some of this energy work and what we're calling contemporary healing modalities, quantum healing modalities, to move away from this notion of woo-woo and into, no, this is just what you do to understand yourself and to move forward in life.
Sounds like a perfect time for a trip to Club Joyful. You could start by going to clubjoyful.com, just like it sounds, online. And then for those of you who are in town, you can go to 2121 Lincoln Boulevard, Venice, California. However, if things go like I feel Scott's headed and Erica, there may be a Club Joyful in a town near you. Scott, as we're closing here, I like what you have on your front page. Your everyday escape where kids play, parents relax, and we all come together in community. And there's that. Actually, the AI, it might be somewhere on your website, but the AI on the search engine said, Club Joyful is a vibrant community space offering a diverse range of activities and amenities designed to create a joyful environment for individuals and families. We have other links for Scott, including that for his music and, of course, Instagram for Club Joyful is just that, Club Joyful. Find that at The Life Changes Show, as well as some more information on Scott. Scott, I know we're going to get to learn more about you and get to experience, actually, Mark's gotten to experience your space, is why we're here because
yeah, that's right.
He felt it. He got it. So definitely looking forward to it myself. All the best to you. And like I said, it just feels like it's the start of the conversation. When actually did you open?
The cafe opened only about a month ago, and about a year or so we've been open doing classes for kids and, you know, events, and we operate as a venue and do a lot of birthday parties and things like that. And I guess that would be my closing thing is, you know, we got pretty heady here talking about community and, you know, changing your life stories. But at the end of the day, we're really just trying to be a place to have fun, to really just find your community, take care of your kids, take care of yourself, smile, get outside, do fun things. And on that path to finding your inner joy and fulfillment, yeah, you can take a sideline, you can do the work, but we just want people to know we're here to have fun, to create a great energy and a great vibe for families and people here on the West Side, and are really grateful for the opportunity to come here on the show and talk about myself and talk about the club.
Our pleasure. Look forward to more. Scott Clark, thank you for being with us and for bringing the joyful of Club Joyful to the Life Changers show.
You got it.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Vivian, and I need some answers once again. There appears to be an energy shift taking place, and I see a lot of beautiful videos online that show animals that have been dangerous to other animals in the past getting along wonderfully. There are several videos showing a lion making friends with a puppy, and there are so many others that show lots of animals' interactions that are completely different and much better than in the past. For example, there is a great video of a cat nursing ducklings. So why can animals get along even with their natural enemies, and why is it harder for humans? And what can we do to change this?
Dearest Vivian, that's a beautiful and deeply thoughtful question. And you're not alone in wondering this. Many people are noticing these kinds of unusual, heartwarming interspecies relationships and asking what they might mean, especially in a time when human conflict still runs deep. I believe it might be because animals often operate from instinct and emotional attunement. If a dog senses warmth, safety, or playfulness from a kitten, it responds in kind. Humans filter their relationships through thought. Should I trust this person? What do they believe? Do they deserve kindness? That can create distance. I also believe that animals can adapt when the environment is safe. Many of the videos you mentioned show animals raised together are introduced in non-threatening environments, sanctuaries, homes, peaceful spaces. And yes, humans too thrive in peaceful, nurturing environments. But many live in fear, scarcity, or under systems that perpetuate inequality or competition. Fear blocks compassion. So, dear Vivian, let's look at what we can learn from these animals. Maybe these interspecies friendships are reflecting a possible shift, not just in them, but in us, a kind of global rebalancing, a reminder that connection transcends difference. Peace begins in safety and trust. Compassion is natural, not rare. These moments, a lion cuddling a puppy, a cat nursing ducklings, aren't just cute videos. I believe they're glimpses of a consciousness shift, or what some spiritual thinkers describe as a return to unity. So your question, if animals can do it, why can't we, might be the exact call we need to be asking and acting on. If you're open to this shift and want to be a part of it, then you're already moving in the right direction. What we do individually can ripple outward, especially when it comes from a place of truth and love. Here's how we can begin to mirror the peace and harmony we're seeing in animals. Animals don't overthink. They feel into each other. We can do the same by listening without planning a response, not assuming based on past behavior, and by being curious instead of judgmental. So let's do our best to go into each interaction like it's new, just like a dog greeting someone it hasn't met before. I believe these animal friendships are part of a collective consciousness evolution, that Earth itself is shifting to a more heart-centered frequency, and animals, being more tuned into nature, are simply responding first. To me, this means humans are next, and those who notice it, like you, are here to help guide others into it. I lovingly ask you to join me in saying my daily meditation. I open my heart to connection beyond boundaries. I choose presence over fear and compassion over judgment. Just like the lion lays beside the lamb, I trust in a new world of peace. I am part of the shift, and I bring it with me wherever I go. Vivian, you can say this each morning or before interactions that feel charged or important. You can also share this with your family and friends. The more people we can encourage to live this affirmation, the sooner we will see an even greater collective shift.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have Morris Mills. He's an artist, a writer, a producer, and a performer, and so much more. Morris Mills, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. So great to have you here. And we have Tess Cacciatore and Linda D'Onofrio to thank for introducing us to you. But you, you've been, it's interesting, the way I said it was, I feel like you were born in a sea of music, and I didn't realize just how much of a sea it was.
I would say true.
Tell us a little bit about that sea of music.
Well, my mother and father were singers. My father was a baritone. He passed in 2018. My mother, she's still with us. She sings and she plays trombone. I have a brother that's a musician as well. He plays everything. He's a singer, songwriter, and producer as well. He's my mentor. So I have nieces, nephews, and cousins. A lot of us are musicians and singers, yeah.
And you had all kinds of musical influences growing up, right?
Yes, yes. My mother, she's she and my dad, you know, we come from a household of music, so we were influenced. My mother was influenced by country, blues, jazz, and R&B. My dad was, and he likes to listen to the Beatles, Carly Simon, Joni Mitchell, Elton John, the Beatles. So it was an interesting household. It was Presley. So it's very interesting.
So as I was listening and enjoying your music, and I was hearing funk, and I was hearing R&B, I was hearing gospel, I was hearing rock, I was hearing pop. And then when I was asking you about it, you said something brilliant, a lot of brilliant things. But one in particular was, you had no idea there was such a thing as a...
genre. I really didn't. I swear. It was not until my late 20s when I started, when my music started getting popular, and I started was doing some interviews, that word genre was very foreign to me, because to me music was music. And it didn't have a category until, nice. You know, until we started coming into radio, until we started, you know, what kind of music do you do, right? What are you, R&B, are you funk, any of that? I didn't know any of that. I just knew it was just music. And if it sounded good, I loved
it. Nice. Nice.
No, you better now.
What's that?
Yes, I said that I know better now.
You know better now. Actually, you're combining them all and giving us music and new music, music like we don't hear often. As a matter of fact, I was saying to you, because you shared so many songs with us, and it's like, how do we pick? Like, each one seemed to be so different from the other. And of course, one message was better than the, you know, it was just like so much there. Before we hear one of the pieces we did select, that you, like, you didn't know genres, you didn't know, well, you knew some artists, but you didn't know a particular artist, and your brother bought a record, I guess, and brought it home of a particular artist.
Yeah, I think I was about 9 years old, and it came from college. First, let me set the story right. So my brother was a musician, and he was the big brother of the family. He's the oldest, right? So we used to have a band, right? And he will always put me in the forefront of the group, right? So, you know, he had all kind of music in the basement too. So we would spend hours just listening to music. So my brother had gone off, had grown up, and he went to college in his freshman year. And he came back home, and he brought a record home. And the record was called, the flip side was called Baby, right? And then the other side was called Soft and Wet. So the artist that he brought home was, his name was Prince. And his exact words were, "This guy sounds like you."
That's true.
So I was about 9 or 10 years old, right? So at the time, you know, I was listening to Switch, this Philip Bailey, Smokey Robinson, everybody singing falsetto. So when I learned how to sing, it was falsetto. So he brought it home and he says, "Check this out. This guy sounds like you, and he sounds like a girl."
Okay.
Sounds like a girl. So, okay, that's cool. That's cool. And then later on in life, he, that particular artist became a very influential part of me and my brother's life. Yes, musicianly, and the artist was Prince. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, he doesn't just sound like you. You look a little bit like him too.
Well, it runs in the family. it runs in the family. Prince is my cousin. So we didn't find that out till much later on in life, as I was growing up. We were at a family reunion, and my sister was bragging about about him. Oh, he's so cute. Oh, he's so fine, and you know, just going off, right. And my uncle turned to her and said, "Well, you know, that's your cousin, right?"
What a way to find out.
Right. I turned and looked. My brother looked. He's like, "Yeah." He said, "Well, that's our first cousin." And then he starts telling the story. See, my mother was an introvert. She didn't travel much outside of Texas, and she wasn't a big family. How should I say that? A big family gathering. She just stayed among her brothers and her mother. She didn't venture outside of that. So there's a lot of cousins and relatives that we haven't met or that we didn't know about until we got older.
Right? And there it is.
There it is.
And there it is. So we're going to get to hear one song from, I think this is, So You Believe in Love is from which album?
The Dawn.
The Dawn. Okay, great. And so tell us about Do You Believe in Love? And we're about to hear about 3.5 minutes of it. It it goes on and you want to hear the whole of it, but we're going to get to hear at least that much of it. Tell us about Do You Believe in Love?
Wow, that's a good question. Do You Believe in Love is... I was never asked that question before. So,
okay. Like, should we play it first?
Yeah. Play it first and I'll come back. And
Well, when we come back, actually, I want to ask you about another song too, actually, that we're not going to get to play. But regardless, it does speak for itself. I mean, I got it. I'm sure you will too. Here is Morris Mills' song, Do You Believe in Love, pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show.
Tu crois en amour?
I believe Morris Mills. Thank you for sharing that with us. You Believe in Love, and that's from The Dawn, and that is available where music is sold and shared, Spotify especially, and you could reach Morris Mills, MORRISMILLS. He's on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, all at Morris Mills or Morris Mills and the Assembly. We got links for Morris on our Life Changes show page. Find them there. And speaking of Morris, we have a video there. Do we want to talk about this? Well, it's funny because a lot of people say, why didn't you make a video of Do You Believe in Love, which we just played, but you made a video of Don't Cry Jamie, which we actually shared on the webpage before we even knew the story. I think it's important to share in the sense that how this song came through to you. Do you mind?
Yes, I don't mind. Before I go into that, let's talk about Do You Believe in Love?
Oh,
like, what's that about, right? Just, I didn't want to deviate from that, if you don't mind. Just real quick.
No.
It's about God. That song is about a spiritual encounter with Him and trying to find myself, trying to find love. Not in the physical sense, but in a spiritual sense, where I can be loved completely without judgment and without conditions. So that's what that was about.
Thank you for sharing that, Morris.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Metaphysically, as you say in the song.
Metaphysically, spiritually. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Don't Cry Jamie. Yeah, well, so when we went to go film the video, we were supposed to do You Believe in Love? And I changed it at the last minute. Yeah, I changed it at the last minute. So how I did the video, a friend of mine's name, Vladimir Santos, he's a video producer and director. Him and I were looking for a location to shoot Do You Believe in Love? And what happened, I found this church, this Presbyterian church on Wilshire, this big church, and we walked in, and I told him, I said, watch, we get this place and watch, we get it for free. He said, yeah, right, buddy. I said, watch. So we walked up in there, and I pitched them. And they loved it, and they said that we could have it for free.
Oh, wow.
Really? For real? Shocked myself. But he said, oh, man, you really knew that. I said, yeah, man, you got to trust yourself, right? You got to call things
nice.
Out as they were, as though they were not. So by faith. So Don't Cry Jamie is about I had lost my father back in 2018. He died of prostate cancer. And, you know, I'm a very, very spiritual person. So I went to go visit my dad right before he passed, right? And, you know, spent a couple of days with him, about 3 days. But I had to get back home because my wife was expecting, so she was expecting around the 5th, and I didn't want to leave, but I had to leave, right? So, yeah, I get kind of emotional because I haven't talked about this in a while. And as soon as I got home, right, as soon as I left, I kissed him and I told him I loved him, and I said, I'll see you again, right? Flew back home, and that next morning I got a text from my mother and said he had passed. Right. So in the following I just dreamed about him like every day. I mean, every night I dreamed about him. But my baby sister was taking it hard. She was taking her hard because that's what's his baby, right? She's the youngest, and it was his baby. And he said to me in the dream, tell Jamie I wish he wouldn't cry so much. I wish you wouldn't take it this hard. And I woke up from the dream. And I put pen to paper. And I penned those lyrics.
Don't cry, Jamie. We have that video on the Life Changes show page. It's also, of course, on YouTube and on the socials. So, Morris, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Well, we do want to do one more song, and that song, interestingly, we picked before we even had the chance to chat like we did at length, where I said to you, it's almost as if your music is like your mission, your preaching, like, and you laughed and you said, you're a preacher too, right?
Yeah, well, I'm, let me clarify that.
Okay.
I start off in music and then I end up wanting to be a minister because I love the gospel so much, right? Right, just loved it. And I thought that was my calling, right? So I spent years, preaching the gospel, you know, baptizing people and, you know, going for church and doing evangelism, street evangelism and all of that. So that's where pretty much all that has come from. And, you know, got to a point where music and preaching, music was starting to creep back in my life. And plus I was having a lot of trouble in the ministry. You know, I was just having a lot of conflict with other ministers. They would be jealous, you know, or something like that. They would let me come and preach. It wasn't, you know, character assassination and all of that. I'm just, oh my God, is this what this is about? So
it sounds like the music industry.
Yeah, doesn't it?
So you went to music.
You know what? That experience had prepared me for the music industry.
Okay.
I swear. I'm glad you said that. See?
I was kind of kidding, but.
Yeah. Oh, no, man. So it was. So I just, you know, music is very powerful. Very powerful. So if you're, what we say and what we convey through music is very emotional. And I think I picked that up from you today where we talked about Don't Cry Jamie. And we talked about it. And, you know, if you can't connect with your music with people, they want to, why are you doing it? So my ministry, it's not so much in the pulpit, but it's in the, it's in my music. It's in my performing. It's what I do. So
it's in your lyrics, for sure.
Yes.
You sing about so much. As a matter of fact, The Dawn is about social consciousness and change and
spirituality.
Spirituality, absolutely. And without knowing this is what was the conversation, we ended up choosing the title song of your revival album, and it's a revival. It's called Revival, and I think you'll get it. As a matter of fact, it goes on for over 13 minutes. We're going to play about 3.5 minutes of it. You can
is it that long?
Yeah, it is.
That's the extended version.
The extended version is, yeah, I know. Well, that's the one we enjoyed. So here is about 3.5 minutes of Revival. This is Morris Mills' pre-recorded song Revival here on the Life Changes Show.
Fala, she gave me. I got a brand new walk. I got a brand new trunk. No, I'm not ashamed. Yeshua is his name. He gave his life for ransom for many.
Revival, Morris Mills. Thank you for letting us share that here on the Life Changes Show. Morris Mills, M-O-R-R-I-S, Mills, M-I-L-L-S. Find him on our Life Changes Show page, but find him also, of course, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. And where's the best place to hear your music, Morris?
Every place but Spotify.
Oh, but Spotify.
But Spotify, yeah.
And I know you're on iHeart. And, well, you're everywhere, but Spotify.
Everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But Spotify.
Okay.
I'm waiting for you to ask the question, why not Spotify? But you don't want to open up those categories.
I didn't ask. Everywhere but Spotify. I think we got it.
Spotify. MorrisMills.com. It's probably the best place to get all the music, all the videos, all the merch. It's going to be the central place for it. Streaming has really killed the music industry. It has not helped. It helped the fans, but it didn't help us. Spotify is not in my good graces right now, because they need to pay the artists not a fraction of a penny, but for what it's worth, you know.
I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. So MorrisMills.com. Go there and find him on the socials and go check out Don't Cry Jamie. Thank you for that song as well. Morris, this has been an absolute pleasure. I hope to catch you live and get to see one of your performances. And then how do we know where you're performing and when? That's at MorrisMills.com.
MorrisMills.com, yes, or either there, or my Instagram pages, or the Facebook pages, yeah.
Okay, thank you for sharing like you did with us tonight, all your stories and your music, and looking forward to more from you and your camp. Thank you so much, Morris. All the best.
And same to you. I appreciate you having me, man, and thank you. And it was a good show too, Scott. Really, really enjoyed listening to him speak as well.
I felt good all the way around about this. So with a big thank you to you, Morris Mills, our performance guest. Another big thank you to our interview guest, Scott Clark. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host Mark Lejeur, and our whole family here at the Life Changer Show. I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.